You're listening to the Let's Be Real podcast. Now, here's your host, Andy Hughes.
Our guest right now is an all-star in more ways than one. He played 12 seasons in Major League Baseball and was named to the All-Star Game three times. In his playing career, he played with the Cleveland Indians, Cincinnati Reds, Pittsburgh Pirates, Detroit Tigers, and Boston Red Sox. In 2015, he hit another home run with the Pittsburgh community by helping create the Miracle League of the South Hills in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He now works with MLB Network as an analyst as well. Let's welcome the mayor, Sean Casey, to the Let's Be Real podcast. Sean, thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Hey, great. No, I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We're so thrilled to have you, and I got to say, you know, it is mid-October here, Sean. I would imagine that this is a pretty busy time for you being at MLB Network, and we're really in the full swing of the MLB playoffs right now.
Yeah, it was a great time for if you're a baseball fan, you know, nothing better than October. The air's changing a little bit, it's getting a little chillier, and it's postseason baseball. So, you know, for me as a player, this is the ultimate, and as an analyst now, this is really cool because get a chance to dive into the games and get a chance to go to the World Series and spend the time there too. So it's a great time of year for me and for everybody that loves baseball.
It absolutely is. Couldn't agree more. And I want to start there, actually, with the game of baseball. Obviously, you played for so long. Your kids are involved with it. You're an analyst. You built the Miracle League in the South Hills. Obviously, baseball means a lot to you. Where did that love for baseball begin?
Oh, man, it's probably back to my dad just growing up. We played a lot of wiffle ball when I was little, and then I think I played my first organized league at St. Louis de Marillac when I think I was 6 years old. That was the first time. And then, I just loved hitting. And I loved my dad. I think I loved baseball initially because my dad loved it. And then, as I got older and I got to learn about the craft of hitting, a guy named Frank Porco was a huge influence in my life. He was a hitting instructor down at Grand Slam when it just opened up in Bethel Park, and used to hit with him every Tuesday night and then hit all week by myself and then go back with him. And I started loving the art of hitting, and it was a lot of hard work. A lot of working after school and hitting, and I just loved the craft, and I loved the competition, the one-on-one match between that guy on the mound and me in the box. And it was just my dad and I always going to Pirate games with my friends growing up, and, being a Bucco fan, and, just baseball's just been such always a huge part of my life. And, then I went to college and ended up playing pro ball. So, I have a lot of my life. I'm very thankful to baseball. I'm very grateful that I was fortunate enough to play it at the highest level. And, and even with the Miracle League now, with the kids that we have, our mission statement really is part of like all kids deserve a chance to play. And the fact that we have over 300 kids and we have they get their own uniforms, they get to be a part of a team, they get to play the wonderful game of baseball, they get to experience teammates and friends and all that stuff. It's just it's the gift that keeps on giving baseball for me. And, the Miracle League now is probably the ultimate gift that it's given.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Miracle League is absolutely fantastic. I mean, just allowing those kids to get involved with baseball. It's such a great game, such a great way to connect with people. And, when you were starting up, what was your path like? Because, anytime you talk to a Major League Baseball player, I think I have to ask, how hard was it to get to the big leagues? And what were some of the things that you had to do to kind of separate yourselves from the others? Because, as you know, there's so much talent that comes up in baseball. And, I think a lot of the things that put people ahead is maybe the mental part of the game. And I think that's something that not a lot of people talk about enough.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, you hit the nail right on the head. I mean, for me, the mental side of the game is probably that's the separator. There's a lot of talent. I was a coach for the Toronto Blue Jays a couple of years ago, and I was at spring training. And, a lot of those guys, Vlad Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette, these young kids are there. And I always said, what's the difference? How come 95% of you are not going to play a day in the big leagues? Why is that? Why? Because I said, if I brought my family over to watch you take batting practice with the big league players, no one would know the difference. No one can tell the big leaguers, you guys all hit the ball 400 feet. You all can run. You all can throw. You all can do all that stuff. why are 95% of you not going to play one day in the big leagues? It makes no sense at all. And I said, I'll tell you why. That the guys that can go, that the big leaguers, they don't waste a pitch all year long. For 162 games, they're able to focus in on the task at hand, you know, focus on their process, not worry about the results, and they're able to do it over and over and over and over and over, and you know, until it's exhausting. And you know, for me, I was fortunate. My dad kind of stumbled upon a book when I was a junior in high school called The Mental Game of Baseball by a guy named Harvey Dorfman and Carl Keel. And it was, I, you know, I didn't love reading back in high school, but I loved that book for whatever reason. I used to love, you know, during my free periods, I'd go and just mark it up and, you know, just talking about, you know, a lot of stuff in there was just, you know, how to breathe, how to slow yourself down, how to turn your vision on, focus on the process, not the results, focus on the task at hand, one pitch at a time, expectations of people, heart, you know, dedication, concentration, relaxation. It was just stuff that I, as a 16-year-old kid, I just sponged it up. Mm-hmm. And like looking back at my career, like had I not really got into that book, The Mental Game of Baseball, like at such a young age, you know, I think that really helped me out a lot to go one pitch at a time. And, you know, I think that helped me take my skills. Obviously, I hit every day after school. I put a lot of work into hitting. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But that's not what gets you to the next level. What gets you to the next level is being able to think correctly, because, you know, it's such a negative sport. You know, if you're fail 7 out of 10 times, you're a superstar in the game of baseball. You know, in any other sport, any other profession, you're fired. You know, so there's a lot of failure, and you know, it's all about your perspective. You know, you look at failure. I used to think that failure was information. You know, failure is not failure. I'm not going to get down on myself. You know. I there's frustration, but I'm going to use it and look at it and say, no, failure is information. What can I do better next time to be successful in the bat or whatever? So, yeah. You know, long answer, you know, but it's the right one. You know, the mental game is so important. And when you see these guys at the big league level, especially the elite players, man, they're not wasting one pitch and they're coming for you every at bat. And, you know, whether it's 9-0 in the ninth or bases loaded, you know, in Game 7 of the World Series, you know, these guys are focused. Mm-hmm. I didn't know either. I didn't know how much it was going to help me in the end. You know, yeah. I didn't know it was going to be that big of a thing for me, you know, really, you know, learning that book. And like I said, you got to have tools in your toolbox, you know, so we all have physical tools. And I said, you know, you got to have the mental tools too. You got to have the mental tools to live in the moment, to take a deep breath, slow your anxiety down, all that stuff. I always tell my kids, you can't bring a knife to a gunfight. You know, you got to have a gun that's got a chamber where you got 15, 16 mental bullets, you know, that if 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 don't work, you got to have 6, 7, 8. You got to have something you can go to. And not only, and I said, that doesn't just happen. Like, you really have to develop that skill, develop your brain, develop all that stuff, and then put it into action.
Absolutely. No, that's great advice. And you definitely have to prepare for that failure, because, you know, sometimes you just fail and you have to get right back up. And I think that's really important. And what were some of your biggest challenges you faced during your playing career? Obviously, there's, you know, a lot of different things getting to the big leagues. There's a lot of difficult things that can happen. Were there any big challenges that you were able to overcome?
Oh, yeah. My third day in the big leagues, I got hit in the eye with the ball, and I got an orbital fracture right out the gates. I'd just been traded for the Reds' number one starter, and 3 days into the big leagues in practice, I took a shot to the side of the eye, orbital fracture, 4-hour surgery. You know, here I was, the new big prospect, the new player for the Reds, and I was already in the hospital. And,
oh, man.
You know, not knowing my career was really in jeopardy, to tell you the truth. I damaged my iris, and my vision changed in that eye. You know, I still have astigmatism, but, you know, I was feel very blessed and fortunate, and I feel like I was, I don't know, God was like, you know what? No, your career's not over yet. you're gonna have a few more years. So I was really fortunate and lucky to be able to come back and play and kind of overcome that initial injury. And then, you know, there's ups and downs, you know, mentally, physically, all that stuff. I remember in 2000, I got hurt the day before the season started, missed a couple weeks, came back, was hitting like 200 at the break. You know, after having an all-star year in 99, and I was thinking, wow, what's going on here? You know, it's just – and then, you know, it's the mental side of the game of being able to, you know, get yourself back into a place where you can, you know, you know, get some success, gain some confidence, and you know, so that was, I remember, you know, back that 2000 year, I ended up having an unbelievable second half and a terrible first half, and it taught me a lesson, like, you know, you just got to stay with it, you know, you can't abandon ship, you know, because at the end of the day, it's you versus you. I mean, there's no one in your corner when you're in the batter's box hitting. There's no coach. There's no dad. There's no mom. There's no brother, sister, friend. There's nobody. It's you. So if you're not right with your thoughts and you're not right with, you know, getting ready to go out there and compete and thinking some good thoughts in your head, then no one's going to do it for you.
Absolutely. No, you're totally right. It is you versus you. And one thing I'd also like to bring up is, you know, we talk a lot about empathy on this podcast, and, you know, you were in 2007, you were voted the friendliest player in baseball. I guess that kind of explains your nickname, the mayor, as well. What did that mean to you, and how important was it to connect with others in the game? Because I feel like that has to be such a fun part of it. You know, being a first baseman as well, you get a chance to talk to a lot of people.
It meant a lot to me just because it was voted on by the players. There was almost 500 guys that voted. So it was really cool to see that. You know, I think at the end of the day, you know, that's what life's all about, you know, connecting with people, you know, whether you're a Major League Baseball player or you're, you know, a teacher or whatever you are. I mean, it doesn't matter whatever your profession is. At the end of the day, you know, life's about relationships, and it's about connecting with people, and ultimately you connect with people by kindness, you know, by treating people right. I mean, no one wants to be treated like crap. No one wants to be talked down to. No one wants to be belittled. And I think, you know, people like to be recognized. And, you know, that was a lesson I learned early on. My dad was big on that, you know, that people like to be recognized. And I was never a shy kid. And, you know, was always talking to people. And first base was like, you know, like literally like an office for me. So it was great. I, you know, it's just, baseball's a small fraternity, so I really got a chance to get to know a lot of the guys. And then when they come to first base, you know, you have all different kinds of conversations with them. So it was the best position I could have played. And like I said, you know, you treat people the way you want to be treated, you know, that's the, at the end of the day, I think that's the, probably the golden rule on life is treat people right.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better there. And I remember when you were traded from the Cincinnati Reds to the Pirates, I can't imagine how emotional you were, because, I mean, you're coming over to your hometown team, but also at the same time, you connected with so many people in Cincinnati. You're part of their Hall of Fame. What was that like? Because I'm sure that was an emotional time for you in your career.
Oh, man, that was such a weird time for me. My daughter Carly had just been born. I got traded at the winter meetings, you know, which is weird because I had 1 year left in my contract with the Reds. I played 8 years there. Then I was getting traded to Pittsburgh. It was like my dream team because I had grown up in Pittsburgh and all I wanted to do was play for the Pirates. So it was like, I just bought a house in Cincinnati. It was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. You know, people don't realize, you know, you're with the team for 8 years and then you get traded and the next day you're at a press conference in Pittsburgh saying how excited you are to be here. When meanwhile, you're like, you don't know what to think. You know, it's like just a crazy, crazy time. So, yeah, I loved my time in Cincinnati. It was unbelievable. You know, got a chance to represent that city for a couple, three All-Star games. And the 99 Reds team was my favorite team I ever played on, and made some great friends. And feel like some people are still family that I had there. And coming to Pittsburgh was, like I said, a dream come true for me, you know, put on the Pirate uniform. I think it was bittersweet because we were not a good team, you know. I think at that time, you know, ownership was, you know, grinding, and you know, we just didn't have the Jimmys and the Joes at the end of the day in that clubhouse. And so when I got traded to the Tigers that year, basically got traded to all the, you know, Pirates, you know, the Pirate, basically the whole staff was the Pirates, you know, it was Leland, Gene Lamont, Lloyd McClendon, Rafael Belliard, Don Slott was our hitting coach. Andy Van Slyke was our first base coach. It was like, you know, these are like the guys I grew up wanting to be. So it was kind of a cool Pittsburgh year for me. I was in Pittsburgh for 4 months. I got traded at the deadline to the Tigers, and I felt like I was still in Pittsburgh because of that staff.
Yeah, I remember that, and it's funny you mentioned Andy Van Slyke. I was actually named after Andy Van Slyke. So
Are
that's
you serious?
yeah,
That's
I was.
great.
Yeah, my mom was
That's
like, "I'm gonna name you after my favorite Pirates player at the time," and it ended up being Andy Van Slyke in 1990. So.
Oh, that's so great. You know what? Here's a funny story. Before the it was before game three. Game three at St. Louis got rained out. And Van Slyke would do this drill with me before, I would go, he and I would go hit. He would throw as hard as he could from batting practice, from the batting practice distance, and he still had a cannon of an arm. So he was only like 30 feet away. So it must have been 100 miles an hour he was throwing. And we did this unbelievable drill, working on really seeing the ball just going, and reacting to it. If it's a ball, stop. If it's not, go. Now it was an awesome drill. And I remember game three got rained out. So Andy and I were in the cages hitting for like an hour. He and I, he had a rubber arm. He threw a million balls. And I remember I stopped for a second. I said, "Hey, man," and this is my ninth year at the big leagues. And I'm like, "Yeah, I just want to tell you, I'm having a moment right now where I feel like I'm a 15-year-old kid in Pittsburgh." Because I said, "Like, you were my one of my heroes. You were one of my heroes growing up, and I can't believe you're throwing me batting practice, even though it's my ninth year in the big leagues." I just can't believe Andy Van Slyke's throwing me batting practice.
You're a kid again all of a sudden.
It's like seriously, it's like you're a kid all over again. It was crazy.
That's really cool, though. I mean, yeah, that's really cool that you can even still have those moments. And, you mentioned all those names earlier, Jim Leland, Gene Lamont, Van Slyke, all those guys. You worked with a lot of great leaders. And, we talk a lot about leadership. What were some of the best leaders that influenced you in your life? And what were some of the things that they did to really make an impact on you?
Oh man, well, when I think about leaders and I think about my career, Jim Leland was right up there. He was just a great communicator. Jim was great. Like, Jim had a great way of feeling of having a little bit of an edge about him. Like, you knew he was the boss, but you also knew he cared about you. You knew that he'd walk around batting practice every day. "How's the family doing? How's it going? How'd you sleep last?" He took the time to really go around and get to know guys, get to know their families. He really made you feel like he cared. You know what I mean? I think that was, that's that a good leader does that. A good leader makes you feel like, you know what, I really do care about you as a person. And obviously you have a profession to do, and he expected a lot there. There's no doubt about it. But you wanted to do your profession better because you knew he cared about you. And for me, that was huge. He was one of those guys that that was one of the best leaders I've ever seen. Terry Francona, when I was lucky enough to play in Boston there in 08. Tito was just a great sense of humor, kind of same kind of guy, like great sense of humor, really funny. Like, Leland was a really funny guy too, but serious when they had to be. You knew they were the boss, but like you said too, like, they treated you like men. You were allowed to make mistakes. You were allowed to, you were allowed to go out there and be yourself. And I think that was a big thing too with Tito. He was just such a great leader. Another guy who was a great leader was Mark Shapiro, who's now one of the head guys, runs the Toronto Blue Jays. When I was coming up in the minor leagues with the Indians, he was the minor league director. And I just remember, like, the way he treated everybody, not just your top prospects. They made sure that everyone had, the protein shake or the Gatorade bar. They made sure that the weightlifting was good. The Indians, when I was in the minor leagues, Mark Shapiro and that whole Indians organization were so organized. They had such a good game plan. They helped you to put down your goals on paper and to see what you could do and then how to follow through with that plan. And just look back. But Mark Shapiro is one of the better leaders too that I've ever been around.
That's awesome. Any good Jim Leland or Terry Francona stories that you'd like to share? I'm sure you have a lot.
Oh, well, Leland, when I first got to the big leagues, I got traded over the Rays. I'm at my locker, and the media's gathered around me, and here comes Leland. "I need to talk to you real quick." So I'm like, "Oh, I gotta get going. Leland needs to talk to me." So I get there, go in the office. It's me, Leland, Gene Lamont, and Lloyd McClendon. So I'm like, "Oh, it's really cool." And he's like, "All right, Case, we got you. Congratulations. Great to have you here. Now we got to go over the signs." He's like, Gino, give Case the signs, because Gene's the third base coach. So Lamont's like, "All right, Case." He's like, "Here we go." He's like, "We're going to go through the signs, blah, blah, blah. Go to my ear. It's hot. And now stay with me. And if I go to my hat, it's a hit and run. and then we're not going to give you the bunt sign. And then Leland comes in. He's like, all right, now listen. He's like, no, no, you got the hit and run. Not going to give you the bunt. Now, if you get on first base with a walk or a hit, I don't want you looking over Gino. I want you looking in the dugout because I want you looking at me. Now, if I get to the top step and we catch eyes, as soon as we catch eyes, stay with me. If I jump up and never come back down, you steal. And I was so locked in because I was like, so he was so serious. And it was just, I was like, that was my first, glimpse of his sarcastic humor. Wow. You know what I mean? It was so good. It was so good. If I jump up and never come back down, you steal.
You were probably speechless at that point.
Oh, yeah, it was great. I was like, what? That was so good. It was just, Leland was the best, man. He's the best. He's, you know, still consider him a really good friend to this day. And, he's just a wonderful, wonderful man.
That's amazing. That's a great story. Now, I want to kind of get, now, obviously, after you retired, well, even during your playing career, though, you did a lot with the community, and I know that it's always been a big part of your life, even before the Miracle League started. You've done so much work with charities and kids and whatever community you were in. How much of an impact has that made on your life?
Oh, man, I think the much is given, much is expected. You know, I mean, for me, giving back, I always like the adage, you know, you make a life by what you get, you make a living by what you get, make a life by what you give. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. Mm-hmm. For me, giving back to the community, I think was, you know, just more of an obligation. You know, I felt it in my heart to help, I felt so grateful and thankful for my life. You know what I mean? That, you know, I felt like, we all should be giving back in some certain extent. You know, I mean, everybody at some point, you know, should be. And, for me, it was just, it was nice. It was, you know, being involved with some charities in Cincinnati, Big Brothers and mm-hmm. Big Sisters. And I did a thing where I got Casey's kids in Cincinnati. We would left a lot of underprivileged kids with some tickets to the games. And just being a part of the Miracle League here, you know, has really been a life-changing experience, and it's, you know, it's just, it's wonderful. It's wonderful, and I'm very thankful and grateful that, you know, the platform that I had with Major League Baseball really helped raise a lot of money to affect a lot of people in our community, you know, at the Miracle League, so it's been a wonderful thing.
Yeah, it's an amazing facility, and for the listeners that aren't aware what the Miracle League field is, it's a field basically that was built to allow underprivileged kids to get an opportunity to play baseball and make friends and connect with people. It's an amazing facility, and my uncle, who has Down syndrome, had the opportunity to play on the field, and he absolutely loved it, so he had a blast.
Yeah.
So it's an amazing place.
Yeah, we have kids, you know, a lot of special needs kids. You know, we feel like they're just kids with different abilities, and they're just so wonderful, and the smiles that are on their faces when we're playing out there, and the love that's in the stands, and the parents that get to watch their kids for 1 hour a week, mm-hmm. and not have to take care of them and stuff. It's just and the volunteers that are buddies for the kids. It's just a wonderful, wonderful program.
It absolutely is. And I had to ask, you know, building a facility like that, what was the process like for that? Because I'm assuming that had to take a lot of time and a lot of work, too.
Well, yeah, the process, I had no idea what I was doing. That was the initial process. You know, it's funny, when I first went out there to raise money, you know, everyone thought it was a good idea, but no one would give me any money. And a buddy of mine named Dave Hall, whose son, Buddy, is in our Miracle League, he and I kind of went out initially and just started to raise money. You know, but we started to get some connections to get into the CEOs. Mm-hmm. And Ed Dunlap from Centimark wrote me the first check. He wrote me a $50,000 check for the Miracle League. And I'm forever grateful for that check, because after that, you know, really created a lot of momentum. You know, what I realized when you're raising money, money follows money. So, you know, then Johnny came on board, and then Highmark came on board, and UPMC, and, you know, we started getting a lot of FedEx Ground, and, you know, a lot of people, you know, started to, you know, get in on that. I used like a starting lineup for people, you know, $50,000 for a starting lineup, and that's, you know, a lot of these companies gave us $50,000, you know, to get started. So it was, you know, Dave Rourke, and it was great. It was wonderful. But then, you know, as that started, what was great was we had, you know, the money that was raised, you know, it was really, I wanted it to be Pittsburgh and grassroots. So a lot of, you know, kids from lemonade stands, you know, schools putting together fundraising drives, you know, just people did so much for us, you know, that you know, to raise money, help us raise money. And that facility is almost $2 million facility.
Wow.
You know, that we raised money from really our community, really, really raised it. People came together and, you know, people would run marathon, the Pittsburgh Marathon for us. And just, we have a couple big fundraisers that we do. And I don't know, it's just, what's been cool for me is really, I feel like it's been a community Pittsburgh fundraising endeavor to get the Miracle League going. And I hope anyone that's ever been a part of it or has given us 1 cent, can, when they come up to see those games, they can really feel like they did something.
Yeah, no, it's an amazing facility. And while we're on the topic, where can people find more information about that, with the Miracle League?
Yeah, if you go to MiracleLeagueSouthHills.org, and you can find out how to volunteer, how to sign up, how you could, you know, if you want to give us a donation, we're in the midst of a new fundraising drive. We're going to put up this a lot of shelter with home plate seats behind home plate, but we're going to open up a concession stand. And one of the things that we're doing that's very unique that we're really excited about is we're going to train our kids, our Miracle League kids, to work the concession stand and to work our, you know, work our memorabilia section too. So it'll be just, it's going to be really cool. So you can go to MiracleLeagueSouthHills.org. And like I said, you can sign up to be a volunteer. You can sign up to be a coach and announcer, but also to, donate too, which is great.
Absolutely, definitely check that out. Now, last thing, you are, you know, you're doing all these things, but you're also a father as well. I know you have two sons and two daughters, and how are they doing? What are they up to right now?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, that's probably the biggest part of our lives. You know,
yeah.
My oldest son Andrew is a senior at Upper St. Clair. He's going to go to Dayton to play baseball, so he's excited about that. He's got a big basketball season coming up, so we're all looking forward to that. My other son Jake, he's a junior. They're all volunteers in the Miracle League too. We made sure of that years ago. But my other son Jake plays a little baseball. My daughter Carly's in eighth grade, and I have another daughter Jillian that's in fourth grade. And you know, they're great, and they do a little volleyball. My wife was a Division I volleyball player, so
nice.
I signed that volleyball is a big deal in our house too.
The sports definitely is in the family then, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, no, Sean, this was so much fun. Thank you so much for joining us, talking about the Miracle League and a little bit about your career. Really appreciate it, and best of luck with everything with the Miracle League, and we look forward to hearing more from you on the MLB Network here in the playoffs.
All right, brother. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.